In a recent blog post, journalist Aaron Brown said people around local politics often like to admire problems, that people like to look at problems, they complain about them, they even lose sleep over them, but then few take the steps to actually solve those issues, said Aaron. Aaron is no stranger to KEXE KVXE, from the Great Northern Radio Show, Dig Deep to Power in the Wilderness. Today he joins us from his office at Hibbing Community College. So I'm getting in on your office hours, is that right?
No, that's right, Heidi. Yeah. If a student comes here with homework problems, I may have to step away, but
okay,
we'll see.
Okay. You're Johnny on the spot. I like it.
Yeah.
So first, let's just talk about how important local ideas are and local folks kind of stepping up to run for office. You know, tomorrow we're going to feature the people that are running for school board in the Grand Rapids area. And I think we often forget, because it doesn't get the publicity, that this can matter more to our lives than the presidential race.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually the paradox of our times. Probably the place people can have the most impact with their time, their money, and their passion is at the local level, whether it's in an elected office or even just in a volunteer capacity or even in business or investment. Your local efforts will have a very direct, visible impact. Whereas, you know, the efforts that you would place on a national campaign or national politics will mostly have a very small impact on the world that you live in. So, nevertheless, 90% of our efforts are spent on the latter, on arguing about national politics. So, the piece I wrote wasn't just about running for office or being involved, though that's part of it. It's really, you know, something that's been on my mind as, if you've been around northern Minnesota for any length of time, you know that our communities have had the same problems for all of recent memory. You know, there have been positive steps here and there, and there have been setbacks here and there, but basically, we're trying to get people to live here. We're trying to get businesses and economic activity to remain steady and with even a slight amount of growth. Sustainable, I guess, is the word. We're trying to make life easier for working people. And all of these things seem vexing. Like, we can't ever quite figure them out. And I think part of the problem is we have for too long kind of thought of it as, well, you know, if I vote, then surely the right thing will happen. And of course, there's about half the population thinks you should vote one way and the other half thinks you should vote the other way. And really not much of that changes. I think the piece I wrote started about rethinking our towns themselves. And I'm trying not to sound too much like my friend Chuck Marone from Dig Deep, but rethinking the interior of our small northern Minnesota towns. And I'm from the range, so a lot of my examples come from the range, though I don't know that it's exclusively relevant to just the range.
Yeah.
But we have institutions and real estate sitting in the middle of our town that are potentially beautiful, potentially useful, maybe even cost-effective for renovation, or reuse, and we tend to look at them rather as a liability. You know, this building is no good, or the downtown has got all these problems. But at the same time, we're willing to spend a lot of money and effort on new construction, new things on the edges of towns. So there's a few key examples that I list in the column in Hibbing in Virginia, Minnesota. But really, I think it's just a general philosophy of if you rethink what you do with the space in town and take some agency, I think we're looking at some real potential solutions.
You know, I remember a conversation we had with Chuck Marone about, he was talking about the Brainerd area. But one of the things, you know, a town like Brainerd, also Grand Rapids and Hibbing and all the towns that have community colleges, a lot of times you don't see the students, and all that's going on at those community colleges is pretty amazing, and people coming in. And so he talked about, you know, also a problem for housing for those students. Like, what if in the Brainerd area there was student housing in downtown Brainerd? They would suddenly start going to businesses down there, and they would be more a part of life instead of exiled onto the campuses of the community colleges the rest of the people don't see.
Well, this is a great point, Heidi. I work at Hibbing Community College, and I always have to make it clear that when I speak in my writerly way, I'm speaking for myself, not my employer. But I will use as an example from my work, you know, we have a nursing program here at the college. A lot of the students who enter the nursing program come from the Twin Cities, where at least until very recently there were long wait lists to get in nursing programs in the Twin Cities. Many of these students are either immigrants or first generation from other places, Somalia, different countries in Africa, and other places. And they live in the cities. They usually have families, and they commute to Hibbing. They either find a place to stay during the week, or they stay like with friends and family members who might rent a place or something. But then they have to drive down to see their families. And so, I mean, there is a real issue. Another example, this was a student athlete from Puerto Rico arrived the day before the semester, and they arrived with no housing. Mm-hmm. And so it was quite an effort. It did work out. We found them housing, but you know, if this was an obvious benefit, yeah, absolutely. I think housing in general, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's college students or anybody, is a real challenge, because if you have no money at all, there is some subsidized housing available. It is, maybe you have to wait a little bit, but it is available financially. Obviously, if you have lots of money, you have some options. But if you are a middle-class person or a upper working-class person, which is where most people are, kind of right at average or maybe a little below average income, and you want to rent an apartment, I mean, it's a real challenge. It might be a long time before you find one that is just in the sweet spot with what you can afford with what you can live on. And if you have a family or need multiple bedrooms, it's a real issue. I think these are solvable problems, I mean, way more than solving the problem of, you know, immigration in America or the national debt.
Right.
You know, these are big problems, too, and they do need to be solved. However, housing in your community is a solvable problem, and I think that's what people miss out on when we're arguing, as we do, on national politics. We tend to overlook that there might be solutions, and it's not exclusively the realm of the city council or the county board, but that it's also businesses and local investors who have a role, local banks, local nonprofit organizations all have a role that they can play. And if we are rowing in the same direction, chances are we can get there in a way that I could almost guarantee if we actually tried, as opposed to saying, I guarantee you we can fix Social Security in the next 5 years. I can't guarantee that.
Right.
But I could guarantee we could solve housing in a town like Grand Rapids or a town like Bemidji. Those are places where this is possible. And that's, I think, what's frustrating about our contemporary political discourse.
We're talking with Aaron Brown today. He's got a new blog post called Free Ideas for Iron Range Future. Now, I want to talk specifically about one of your free ideas here, mm-hmm. the public utility plants. Now, I did not know about these until I went on the Dylan Days bus, and they brought us around. And I remember I was on the bus with my mom. I had no idea that there was this big plant that kept the houses warm in the Hibbing area. So first, tell us about that. I don't think that happens in every town. And then, what are those buildings like? What do you imagine they could be like?
Yeah. There is a rich history. Of course, I'm working on this book about this era in Hibbing history when Victor Power was mayor 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago. And during that time, the philosophy of the political philosophy of the village was to try to capture the tax revenue from the iron mines and keep it in town and try to make a village and a town that would outlast the mines. That was the ruling philosophy of Victor Power. And one of the, really, frankly, it was innovative at the time. One of the ideas was to create a municipal power plant. The municipal power plant would provide power for the mines, which gave them something they could support. But it would also provide low-cost electricity to the village, the town, and low-cost heat in the form of a steam heat system. And it was central heat, so they would have water running through these steam pipes all through the village, and the water would heat the radiators in every house in town. And it was from the excess heat from the electricity generation at the power plant. So there was like this captured system. I mean, they still do some of the same things at, you know, even at Blandin, at the paper company in Grand Rapids, and they capture that excess heat from industrial works, and then they use the heat in other ways. Well, this was new in 1921, 1922, and it was really, really cool. Now, it's 100 years later, and the problem you've got is now 100-year-old infrastructure. Granted, they've been maintaining parts of it, and there is new equipment in there. It's not the same equipment and not the same generators and all that, but it is older infrastructure. And one, if you talk to people in Hibbing or Virginia today, but I'll use Hibbing as the example because I'm sitting here. There's a cottage industry of complaining about the Public Utilities Commission because of outages and problems with, and it's all infrastructure based. It's all components that are failing. You know, it's not a knock on the people. It's a knock on the age of the system. So the question becomes, do you invest in replacing the parts indefinitely for however much that costs? Or do you rethink how you do the function of public utilities in a town like Hibbing? It is a unique asset. You might take the philosophy of providing low-cost electricity and public utility services and apply it maybe to a 21st century thought process regarding going renewable. You might not need that coal plant anymore. Do you maybe think about it in terms of energy conservation? Do you think about solar farms? You wouldn't need to be downtown for that. You wouldn't need to be in that gothic Art Deco building that sits on the north side of Howard Street. And so one of the suggestions I had was, if we're rethinking things in the grand scale at a local level, you can really get your imagination going. And you know, you have the downtown Howard Street, you have the power plant just north of it, and then just north of the power plant, you have Bennett Park, which is a gorgeous park, again, from Victor Power's time. What if you could create a new corridor for things like housing or businesses or development or whatever, and make that corridor connect the downtown business district to this beautiful park and bike trails that everybody likes? It just seems like, If we let ourselves stop fighting for a while about some of this other stuff, there are some really beautiful and amazing possibilities that you could look at. And that's just one town. I would suspect that if you were willing to kind of break down the taboos and think about change in a way that is positive, you could probably think of things like this in every town. In every small town. And sometimes they're big and expensive ideas, like that one kind of would be. But they don't have to be. They can be small and people-based. They can be volunteer-based. In the same town, Hibbing, there was this old park and this big boulevard in between two big streets on First Avenue. And the park was kind of run down. There was a memorial to Finnish workers there and some rundown shrubberies and things. And, you know, folks took some time and they just planted... they planted milkweed for the butterflies, and they planted some other plants, and they tidied it up, and they cleaned it up. And it's just a little space now that is a little more attractive and functional than it was, and it didn't cost, you know, thousands of dollars. It cost less than that, you know. So whether you're thinking of how to spend your $1 million in economic development funding or how to spend $200 and a couple of weekends of work, you know, there's something we can do.
You know, what I took away from your blog post was how, you know, this isn't going to just be the city council that makes this happen, but it's going to take partnerships. And it's always been about partnerships between private and public entities. Can you speak a little more to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, going to the history, because this is kind of what I'm in, trying to finish this dang book. That's another story. But if you go back to the beginning, it wasn't just the city council, though the council had a big role in taxing and spending, and they could do things in a way that a business might not. But a lot of what made the town exciting at that time was actually the private investment in both businesses that people wanted, goods and services, but also in contributions to events and activities and big parties, you know, that the local hotel would throw or a restaurant might throw a big event. And it was part of the community plan. And you had things like the Hibbing City Band that would provide music at different events, private events, political events, civic events, holidays, and it was all kind of in a symbiosis of sorts, where it was the private funding. The mines would in fact do some things on their own and provide things both for their employees and for the community, and then of course it required everybody, though. It wasn't just the mines, it wasn't just the businesses, and it wasn't just the city council. It was people working together and actually thinking in terms of what we can do instead of, oh, they ought to do it. About the biggest enemy that I see in my years of covering and being around local politics is this notion of they should do something about that. That's often where conversations end. You know what? This stinks. We wish this was different. Boy, that's lousy. I sure don't like that mayor or city councilor or whoever. But they should do something about this, and then you go and, you know, get back on your phone and play solitaire, and then what? You know, who's the they, and what are they supposed to do? And then the answer, if you don't know, the answer is probably you. I mean, that's the thing that I think we struggle with, because for so long we had this political tradition where, you know, whether it was the New Deal back in the 30s or these other big initiatives or big events like world wars that created a different vibe and a different sense of community. But in our modern days, we don't have a World War II. You know, we don't have a New Deal. I mean, some people want one, but if one's not coming, we can kind of do our own New Deal. But it would require more than just the political entities, because they're capped. You know, the reason the council could do so much in Victor Power's time is that they had the ability to tax mines based on value of their product, whereas now it's a very limited and a very convoluted way of accessing mining taxation, which is still, you know, a big part of the property value of the Iron Range. So, and I think most city councils are in fact capped by state statute on assessment and what they can tax, and so you can't raise that kind of money anymore. So if the council can't do it on their own, you need other people to step up. And the answer, if you don't know who's in charge or who's supposed to, I have students in a group project right now, and this is maybe just generational, but they'll often sit there for a couple days barely talking, and then I'll come and say, and one of them will tell me, well, who's the leader? And I'm like, well, if you asked, it's you. Because if you don't know who the leader of your group is, probably it's you. And so I just think the more we can do to encourage people to just give things a shot in our towns, the better off we're going to be, all of us, no matter which town it is.
So before we go, and it's not a topic that can have a quick answer to it, but I think we often look back on history and we think, you know, what we're living through right now with these contentious political times and all kinds of different issues is just extraordinary, and it never happened before. Child care is kind of an issue like that. I think a lot of people think this is a new thing and we've got to solve it, but it's always been an issue. And in fact, there were solutions in the past.
Yeah. This was one of those things that stands out just because I know it's such a current problem. In my research, I found that during World War I and shortly thereafter, the village of Hibbing had a municipal child care center. Now, granted, they were not regulated the way they are now. And their description of it sounded, frankly, a bit chaotic. It was an old, I believe an old saloon that had been stripped of its saloon functionality and filled to the brim with children and some teachers to care for them, which maybe is not how people would want their children taken care of today. However, it allowed especially women to work at a time when the country needed them to work because many men were fighting overseas. But even after they came back, there was this reality that I think people forget, that it wasn't just miners and housewives back in the day, that many women did need to work and have worked all along. And this notion of childcare being an issue was just as much of an issue then. Culturally, there was more ability for, you know, parents or other relatives or friends to kind of share childcare. But they still needed help, and this municipal daycare center, they called it, actually provided this service free of charge to working people. The only rule was you had to be working. You had to be going to a job. And if you went to a job, you could leave your child at this place and come back at the end of the day and pick up your kid and go home and make dinner. And that was considered normal and not particularly controversial. It, like many things of old Hibbing, was eventually done away with for cost reasons, and statutorily some people felt that they shouldn't be doing that. But it's just an example of, you know, part of the problem is just being willing to invest in this idea. Child care is kind of close to, I don't want to go into too much depth, I know you're running out of time, but child care is close to my heart. My mom is a child care provider, has been for 25 years now, and has frankly been underpaid and overworked for all those years. This is my opinion. What's happening in that industry is really challenging because nobody's really making money, certainly not the providers. Parents are paying a lot, more than they can afford in many cases. There's help for some, but not for all. And this is just creating this environment where it's this impossible and extremely stressful situation surrounding children and families. And it feels like if we're going to invest in anything in our community, like making children and families more secure is just such an economic winner and a cultural winner, that why don't we do it? There's many answers as to why people are hesitant to invest in public programs or that sort of thing. But maybe there are other solutions, and certainly you just have to have the audacity to say, you know what, we're gonna do something dramatic here, and maybe have a drop-in center for certain kids. Maybe we're gonna have some way to work with existing child care providers so that they can, you know, stay open later, or subsidize their costs for more than just the lowest income people. But what about the people for whom child care is somewhat affordable, but still a major hardship? You know, how do we solve that? And there's different state initiatives, and those are not necessarily a bad thing. But I can't stress enough how stressful on local communities the childcare issue is. I mean, anybody with a child right now knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's hard to find, hard to afford.
Yeah.
And so it's an issue like an issue like that. Solving that is going to dramatically affect people's lives.
Right.
Whereas arguing about politics and Donald Trump and whoever else is unlikely to solve anybody's problems. So it's just something to think about.
Free Ideas for Iron Range Future. That's the latest blog post from Aaron Brown. You can read it at minnesotabrown.com. I really like your kind of call to action of, if you're asking who the leader is of this, it might be you.
Mm-hmm. That's what I tell my groups at school.
That's
absolutely
great. Thanks, Aaron. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Heidi. Take care.